Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Star Seed Gem Studios, and they can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com. Tonight's guest is Alan Ross Huguenot, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And good evening to you, Bob.
And good evening, Fran. And I see you have a little anniversary notice there for in history.
In history, yes. Back way back in 1971, astronauts Alan Shepard, Edgar Mitchell, and Stuart Roosa blasted off aboard Apollo 14 on a mission to the moon.
And that's the same Dr. Edgar Allan Mitchell who founded the Institute of Noetic Sciences and studies consciousness today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you made me think when we're talking, since we're talking about the moon and travels, I know it's something that we very rarely, if ever, talk about our life on other planets and alien encounters and things like that. And I remember, it's a bunch of years back now, reading a book by a Professor John Mack, who was
Johnny Mack.
He is well known, a psychical researcher, and he had written a book about alien encounters. And I remember reading all the reports of people who, you know, claim that they were either encountered an alien or were abducted. And at the time, I had already read a lot about near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences, and I couldn't help but note the similarities between the two, which made me think, I wonder if people are really having alien encounters or they're having an out-of-body experience, because some of the features are the same. They're common to both. People report, beings of light. They report sounds, you know, buzzing noises and things of that nature. And, of course, we know from people that have had near-death experiences that it's all relative to your expectations of what you're going to see. So you might interpret things differently. So maybe if they were fearful of aliens or, you know, were interested in that, that's how they interpreted a spirit of light. No, it's every. But some people see religious figures. You know.
You know that I never gave that any thought, but it's true. In the general information that comes out to the public, the people who claim to have been abducted always talk about a light that comes down upon them. Now that so, using your train of thinking, is then the light the trigger for them to have an out-of-body experience, or is the light a assisting them because they need to have this experience?
Well, they could very well be being visited, and I'm not ruling out the possibility that they were visited from other, you know, life forms, but maybe it could be an angelic figure, or it could be a relative, or it could be some a spirit that wants to communicate, and the light would be energy, and you recognize it the same way that other people have these mystical experiences. But think about this. We talk about this shift of consciousness and people being more receptive to psychic phenomena, having, you know, more abilities and more synchronicities that are happening. And I wonder if there are other life forms out there, and I certainly don't think that that the Earth is the only, you know, is the center of the universe, although many people may think that it is. I mean, I'm open to all explanations. But there may be other spiritual beings or that were once in the physical or that are still in the physical or that were never in the physical that have mastered the ability to travel out of body. So they can visit other planets, realms of existence, past, present, and future, as they please. And if that's the case, why would they need to build these Star Wars-type spaceships to travel? If they're that advanced, they could just travel by thought, which is essentially what we believe the afterlife is like, right?
Well, maybe they are traveling by thought, but telepathically they're creating what we want to see, which would be a spaceship. I mean, you have to, in order to be received, you have to communicate to somebody on the level on which they're willing to receive the communication.
That's true. So we would be more likely to, well, they would believe, which is probably true, that we would be more likely to think that it's a real experience if they had something material and physical that they...
Well, they have to arrive in something like a car or something like that, you know, rather than just appearing, which we see from reports of out-of-body experiences. The body just goes, and now it can look down upon its physical self, and it can do all of these other things, which now if we give them those attributes and they use that to communicate with us without coming in a car or coming in a spaceship or arriving in something, the average person can't grasp that.
So I could, assuming that we can manifest material things in this other realm, in another realm of existence, let's call it the afterlife, and we want to manifest a house, we manifest a house. We want to manifest a car, we manifest a car, food, etc. Would then, let's say I'm on the other side and I want to pay a visit to you. You're still in the physical.
Right.
I could try to manifest myself to appear human-like.
We have many reports of that.
Of course, throughout history, you know, of ghosts and apparitions.
Right.
But what if I was able to manifest a spaceship?
But why wouldn't you be able to? We also have reports of...
But manifesting... turning thoughts to appear like physical matter. Maybe you can do that only in the realm in which you exist. Here we're in the...
We don't know that. No. No, let's go to physical mediumship, where things appear in the room. We don't know that the thing appeared because it materialized. It may have been a thought that came through the medium from somebody on the other side that created that object in the room that then appears, and we have many, many reports of that.
That's a good example.
So if you can make a rock appear in a room, why can't you make a spaceship appear in a room?
True. You know, and then as you say, the physical mediumship has been studied for 150, 200 years seriously.
Right, and I don't want to discount...
I've never experienced it, but many people have, and they talk about these apports and As you mentioned, there could be gemstones, could be flowers, could be...
all kind of arms, physical,
you know, limb,
body parts. And let's not discount what we have a huge amount of information on, which is Roswell, New Mexico, that we know the government tried a very clumsy cover-up of. That falls right into that realm.
Yeah, well, there supposedly there was... physical evidence that was hidden.
Right. But so where did the physical evidence come from?
Yeah. Well, that's certainly fodder for another show.
Uh-huh.
We're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by our guest. So stay with us, and we'll be back in 3 minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.winbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Alan Ross Ugano. Our sponsor is Star Seed Gem Studios, and they can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com.
And Alan Ross Ugano is an engineer by profession. He was trained to view the world through the teachings of materialist science. However, he had a near-death experience in 1970 that completely changed his perspective. And he spent the last 40 years examining all of the scientific research on survival of consciousness and the afterlife. His book is called The Death Experience, What It Is Like When You Die, and it's a comprehensive analysis of the evidence, including things such as near-death experiences, reincarnation, after-death communications, quantum physics, and personal experiences that suggest a world beyond the physical. Alan's website is www.afterlife.pro. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you, Bob.
And nice to have you with us. And I guess a good place to start, because it was certainly a turning point in your life, was your own near-death experience. Can you get into a little bit of the circumstances involved and some of your feelings and experiences as you had that trauma?
Well, make it kind of a short story. I was involved in a motorcycle accident, and I was in the hospital for 33 days before I finally got out. I was in intensive care, and during that time, I was unconscious and went to the other side. if all of the things that you will read about if you read Life After Life, which Dr. Moody wrote in 1975. But at the time, in 1970, if you mentioned that you had been to the other side, they immediately began to move towards moving you to the nut house, and they actually did try to have me committed. I got out of the hospital in about 15 minutes the day that I was discharged. My orthopedic surgeon discharged me before they could grab me and throw me in the nut house. That's how it was in 1970.
Yeah, I could imagine.
And I sort of tell that in the book. But what it's like to die and go to the other side, you just, if the easiest way to describe it is you just turn this off. It's not painful. It's not, you just aren't in the physical anymore. You just shift into an alternative reality is the best way to describe it in our modern vernacular. Mm. But death is not at all what people think it is.
Yeah, and you raise a very interesting point. And a lot of the skeptics, you know, today will discount some of the reports by saying, well, it's been, you know, since Moody's book came out, it's been so well publicized, but nobody knew about it in 1970. So yours was very evidential, because you certainly didn't read about it in the literature. So, it must have been a tremendous a problem for you. I mean, you face such disbelief, and as you mentioned, you know, trying to label you as being a nut, and I'm sure your friends and family questioned some of your stories as well. So is that something that a lot of experiences go through?
Yes, that's something a lot of experiences still go through. At that time, I thought, well, maybe if I can leave the hospital. The nurses, they all knew about the near-death experience, and the nurses would all hush me up when the doctors came around, sort of to protect me.
Yeah.
Because the nursing community did understand. But I thought, well, gee, when you get to the back to the church, they'll accept this. I mean, they believe in the afterlife. And, of course, what did the church want? The church wanted exactly what they already have speculated it is. And the near-death experience is not what they have speculated. So, therefore, it doesn't agree with them, so they don't want it. They
right.
want to believe what they want to believe, and this doesn't exactly agree, so they won't accept it. And so they told me they didn't want to hear it either. And then family, same thing. Your family have their beliefs, and family immediately says, well, don't talk about that when anybody's around. We, you know, you can talk about that to us, but when anybody's here, don't mention that.
Yeah.
So you just kind of get pushed into the corner and hushed up.
Yeah.
But after Moody's book in the 80s and on into the 90s, it became more and more popular, and pretty soon I could actually speak about it.
Hmm. I know that in the book, in the death experience, I mean, you discuss one of many things you discuss relating to near-death experience, you know, the life review. And you mention, you know, it comes down to a basic question that's asked. It is, you know, have you learned enough that you're ready to move on? So I would assume that every person who returns after a near-death experience either answered that question as a no or was told no. I mean, so in your case, were you told by telepathically by an entity that it wasn't your time, or did you reach that conclusion, or you just woke up?
Well, when you're over there on the other side, typically what takes place is when you have the life review, and you come to where you're talking to a being of light, and depending on what religious experience you come from, the being of light could be described as all kinds of things. It could be Jesus, Krishna, whatever you have in your experience. But this being of light basically says to you and asks the question, is it sufficient? Have you had enough? Has your life shown you what you wanted to see while you were in the physical? And if you answer that in the negative, then you need to go back. But none of this is asked as a question, as words being spoken to you. It's just you receive it as ESP. You understand, and that's how communication takes place on that side. It's all done by ESP. You don't exactly talk. Okay, but everyone describes in all the near-death experiences you can read about the being of light. And I just sort of woke up over there with that being, and loved being there. It was wonderful. Best place I've ever been. You're totally accepted. You're part of that, that you are part of that. It's not a separate being, exactly. But you get the message, you're going to go back. So you go back, and I came back, and one of the things I do differently from most near-death experiencers will describe that they suddenly were back in their body, and that's exactly how they'll say it. But one or two of us, PH and Matt Water also has this situation, we've come back into the body, and we see what it's like and feel what it's like. And I'll talk about flames, candle flames. You'll hear that in the description. And through all of history, you can go back, and I've researched this, and I talked about it in the book, we're encased in fire. You know, we come through candle flames, and we come back into the body. And PH Matt Water will say the same thing in one of her descriptions. We're the soul's encased in flames. That's what Thoth Hermes said 6,000 years ago. The soul's encased in flames.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's true. And I know what they're describing and what they're talking about. When you talk about the pagan religions, they talk about the baptism of fire, and just what was that? And that's probably what it was. Anyway, I can go on and on. I've got a huge book there.
I know you do go into some real interesting perspectives, you know, depending on the different, you know, religions and cultures. One thing that I wanted to ask you, I noticed that a lot of near-death experiences and people that are able to go out of body and a lot of the channeled reports, you know, in history, people describe a buzzing noise or a rushing wind type sound. When they're moving from the physical realm to the spirit realm, are there any scientific explanations for this that you have come up with?
Well, I can say that yes, St. Paul in his near-death experience heard a mighty rushing wind. That's what I described in the Bible. The explanation for that, I don't have a good scientific explanation to say this is what causes it.
Yeah,
but we all have the same experience. I know that we're changing from this three-dimensional 3D energy system that we have, time and space, and we're moving into fourth, fifth, sixth dimensions on the other side. We're moving into alternative dimensions. We're moving into probably dark energy. This is I do talk about this in great detail in the book. The 96% of the universe that we can't yet discern, that physics can't yet discern, we can only discern 4% of the energy that's in the universe, the light energy. The dark energy we can't discern yet. We're moving over into that when we move out of 3D into other dimensions. And so that noise, that change is probably us speeding up our vibration, but I can't prove that anywhere. But we're probably speeding up our vibration to fit the fourth dimension or the fifth dimension, wherever we're actually moving.
Yeah.
And all of that's speculation out there. You know, it's a quantum theory. How the science fits there, but the science works very beautifully with what we're experiencing.
So do you suspect, and we talk about these non-detectable energy fields, like, you know, dark matter and. Do you think that science, as we discover more of these energy fields, might that be an explanation for the non-local communication? I mean, do you think telepathy, for example, has something to do with these energy fields?
Absolutely. I belong to a club, the Foundation for Mind Being Research in Palo Alto. It's made up of a lot of physicists that used to work for the Stanford Research Institute. And all of them basically see this. They did the remote viewing projects and stuff, Russell Targ and those people. And they don't argue with any of this. The physicists don't. They see that this is probably where all of this is taking place, is in dark energy. I don't know that science will run over there next week. They're moving in that direction very rapidly, but I don't think we're going to, you know, mainstream science is not ready to go there. physics, quantum physicists are quite ready to go there.
You talk quite a bit about reincarnation, you know, in the book, specifically, you know, past life memories of children. What do you think of the argument that some people make that there's no such thing as past lives because if we had them, we should remember them?
Oh, that's real simple. Can you remember what you were doing when you were 5 years old? Just ask that to anybody, and they'll say, well, no, I can't remember that. So if you can't remember what you were doing when you were a five-year-old, how are you going to remember what you were doing 100 years before that? In this physical life here, I would speculate that we decide to come into the physical and not remember everything from the other side of where we were before. Normally, when we have these children, we have these experiences or can remember these things, and Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia spent 50 years of his life doing that, and they're still doing the project that's still there. He researched over 3,000 children who remembered previous lives, and usually there's some trauma involved causing them to remember that. They were killed. They had something going on there. The one I love, the story that I love the most of all, is the one about a woman living in South America, and she lived. The original story. Her boyfriend died, and her father didn't accept him, and he died. Killed himself, I guess, and she got tuberculosis and died. And she told the person the day before she died, I'm going to come back as your daughter. And this was her girlfriend. And the girlfriend and her husband kept single-blind conditions on it and didn't tell the daughter anything about this. And later the daughter was saying, you remember when I was here before? And this whole story. And Ian Stevenson last talked to that woman in 1972 when she's like 56, and she still remembers the previous life. And that kind of story, they're out there. And how can you not believe these after you read the stories? People who don't want to believe it will say, well, that's no reason to believe that. But if you read the evidence, if you look at the evidence, it's very real. And Ian Stevenson researched these under very scientific conditions, you know, wouldn't verify anything unless he could actually verify it. And 3,000 stories like that where people remember, they can tell you things about who they were in the previous life. They meet somebody from that previous life, and that person recognizes that this is them in a new body.
Yeah, and even some of those birthmark cases are truly remarkable. When we talk about these information fields that exist, some people describe them as the Akashic Records. Do you think that the existence of such data banks of information argue against survival, you know, specifically like when we discuss mediumship, because people say, well, the medium is simply extracting information from this storehouse of information, which doesn't necessarily prove survival.
Well, the Akashic Record is simply decoherence. Decoherence is anytime you do anything, the energy of what you're doing when you're in a room somewhere is left in the objects in the room. This is how psychometry works when you bring somebody's hair or a piece of something they used to own, and they tell you the story about the person who used to own this object. It's a decoherence, and that's the Akashic Record being built all the time. It's just the history of the universe. It's always being built, and so it is there. But I don't believe that saying, well, they read the Akashic Record, and therefore that proves that they're not over there on the other side. That's not real. If you look at, for instance, Lenora Piper, she's the medium who was heavily researched in between 1885 and 1925. By the Society for Psychical Research, American Society for Psychical Research. And she talked to William James when he was on this side. And after he died, he came back through her and spoke to the people still here, still researching. Same thing happened with Richard Hodgkins, who originally started investigating her to prove she was a fraud. And after 15 years of investigating her, he sort of no longer believed she was a fraud. And then he died, and he came out and ended up being her control on the other side. If you understand anything about mediums, they have a guide on the other side of their control. And here comes Richard Hodgkins back on the other side to become her control. And when he was living, he was originally trying to prove she was a fraud. All of that's documented. That kind of stuff. How can you say the mediums aren't real? The only way you can do that is you want to believe they're not real. Let's suppose that a scientist wants to say this isn't true. Why does he want to say it's not true? Did his grandma believe in God and grandma say that he was going to go to hell if there was a God? So if he allows a soul to exist at all, then there might be a God out there, then he'd have to go to hell. I don't agree with all of that, but I'm saying, are people motivated by fears like that? Why won't people go look at the evidence that we already have for all this?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, fear is an overwhelming and paralyzing, you know, emotion that it keeps people from looking at the evidence and all of these things that, you know, that you write about in the book. You have a very interesting chapter in the death experience that I think is valuable for people to read. And you address facing death and getting prepared. So what are some of the things that people should realize when death is imminent? I mean, what advice would you give to somebody in that situation?
The dying person or the one?
Well, the dying person.
Both.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I was dying and I, you know, maybe I was religious and maybe I believed everything my doctors say. Would you suggest otherwise?
I would suggest that a person is facing death to consider that everything their doctors and their religious leaders have told them may not be correct. And to be open-minded towards death, because it's going to be very different from what you have heard from doctors and from religion. Death is very different. First off, it's not painful. Secondly, it's not the end. You don't just flip the switch and disappear forever. It's very ongoing. We are immortal. None of us are going to get out of living after we're dead, so-called death, if you want to say it that way. We are going to be here for a long, long time, eternity. And that's something you need to recognize instead of thinking, well, if it's finally the end, it's the end of physical life, unless we reincarnate, which I don't have the answer on why or why some people reincarnate, others don't. I don't have the answers to these things. I only report on what I've seen myself and what I know. And I'm interested in facts more than speculation. Most of the problems we have is from speculation that religions and the medical community and stuff have speculated. But my advice to somebody who's going to die is don't be fearful. It's going to be a lot better than you thought. My own statement that I make often is, I've never been to such a nice place, and I'd sure like to go back.
Well, I think you put that very, very nicely, and it's excellent advice. Going along with that is this fear that people have of judgment. I would imagine that you were not subjected to any deity that passed judgment on you. It's more of a self-review, right?
Well, first off, people think that deity is this, you know, some God that's separate out there. You are not separate from God. You are God. You're going to make the judgment, okay? You're not separate. You're just one of God's experiences going on, okay? And so you're not separate. That's the first thing. And the judgment that you will make, we're reading the Bible in Genesis, he created the world and he looked out and he said, it's good. And that's exactly the determination you're going to make. It was good. It was worthy. It was worthwhile. I learned what I wanted to in the physical. There is no judgment. Now, if you're an evil person, you live in an evil karma, what it's going to be like for you on the other side, that's where you are. You know, how far have you advanced spiritually? Who are you? You know, that's going to be going with you on the other side, too. But the judgment, there's nobody there with you're going to go to hell and be in a lake of fire forever. That's not out there. It's just not
right.
Happening. It's and we all positive judgment, put it that way. And it's your judgment.
Glad you said that. We are talking with Alan Ross Huguenot. His book is called The Death Experience, What It Is Like When You Die. Website for more information is Afterlife Pro. That's afterlife.pro. We have much more to talk about. We're going to go to a break. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Alan Ross Huguenot. This show is sponsored by Star Seed Gem Studios, and they can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. There are three ways you can show us that you like Signs of Life Radio. One, you can go to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Two, you can use the donate button on any one of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And I just want to thank everybody who has been doing that and sending in their donations. We certainly appreciate that. And number three is remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,000 online stores like Old Navy, Snapfish, The Body Shop, Victoria's Secret, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our event, Dessert and Discarnates, set for February 15th, is filled. We thank everyone who registered for that event, and those who are on the waiting list, we'll keep an eye out for a spot for you. And we also want to thank medium Angelina Diana, who will be conducting spirit communication for this private group of just 12 guests. Our Night of Mediums is now set, our annual fundraiser, April 12, 2013, at the Melville Marriott in Long Island, New York, with lots of mediums coming from across the country to take part in this fundraiser. Early bird discount emails have gone out to our members, so until February 28th, you could take advantage of a much reduced reservation fee. And lastly, our Grief Transformation Weekend is set for July 26th through 28th, 2013, at the Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. There are only 50 reservations that will be accepted for this intimate retreat escape with like-minded people seeking to maintain their relationships with those who have crossed over to the other side. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Alan Ross Huguenot. His book is The Death Experience, What It's Like When You Die, website afterlife.pro. Alan, in the book you were talking about near-death approaches. Some people may be familiar under the term deathbed visions. I would imagine they're the same. But what are some of the ways in which a near-death approach differs from a near-death experience?
A near-death experience is where you go to the other side, you leave your body, and you go there. A near-death approach is where you're dying or you're getting close to dying, and you may be seeing your deceased relatives who are waiting for you on the other side, and yet also be talking to the people in the room there where you're dying, if people are collected around. And so also someone who's connected to you, maybe sitting there holding your hand on a near-death approach, may go partway with you. That's another thing that we've got several reports from various people who have actually done this. They're normal people living here on this side who aren't dying, who go partway with the person who is dying in near-death approach. And so it's not really a near-death experience. You haven't gone all the way over there. You've gone partway. But typically what happens at the deathbed situation which we don't see so much anymore. We used to see this back at the turn of the, from the 18th to the 19th century when people died at home. And now they die in the hospital under drugs somewhere. You know, this doesn't happen. But when you die with your family, they often see that the person who's dying is talking to relatives on the other side and turn right around and talk to people in the room and say, well, I'm talking to Aunt Martha. She died 20 years ago, you know, but she's right there and I'm talking to her. And then they'll talk to the people in the room. And so people used to witness this much more often. They don't see it now, but scientifically we now call it the near-death approach. And it really does happen, and it is your relatives who greet you over there. This is what happens on the other side. You come there, and they're waiting there for you. Mm. Now, if you are involved in an accident like I was, they don't have time to gather, and they're not there when you get there. I went over, and they weren't there because they hadn't heard it was happening. You know, I was in a motorcycle wreck. I'm in an ambulance, and hauled to the hospital and put in critical, the critical care unit.
Yeah.
But when you die slowly, the relatives know you're coming, and they collect and they gather, and they're waiting for you.
Mm. What do you...
Because they live over there just like we live over here. You know, they're living alive, okay? So go ahead, Bob.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you had an opinion, because we get asked this question very often, and people want to know why some people seem to get communication on a regular basis, you know, from the spirit world or from another realm, whereas others don't ever get it, you know, and they're saying, why? You know, I mean, you have any thoughts on that, why some people seem to be more receptive?
Oh, gosh, it's a hard one to describe. One thing, if you worry about something, you're halfway to the not getting it. You know, if you don't worry about it, it's easier for them. I know that. The other thing is, you know, you have to have your cell phone turned on in order to get a phone call. And if you never go to a seance or go see a medium or anything like that, you're not opening the door. Mediums are sensitive. They pick up stuff from the other side. You or I, as individuals in the world, may not be mediums, we may not be sensitive, and we can't hear them. They're standing right there trying to talk to us, so maybe we need to go visit a medium. Maybe we need to go turn on our cell phone, literally, so they can call us. And the medium is the only cell phone we have right now from one side to the other, and maybe that's what people need to do. And that's my own personal opinion. It has nothing to do with anything else. If you don't turn the phone on, they can't call you. And so it's best to go there for that.
Do you imagine the process of after-death communication to be a difficult one? I mean, for somebody that goes into the spirit world, I mean, some people think that you should instantly be able to have all of this knowledge and be able to communicate with whoever you choose. But I always thought that maybe it's something that has to be learned or you need help. You have any thoughts on that?
Well, the spiritualists have a viewpoint on that there's levels over there, and that you have to sort of learn how to communicate back. And the experiences of Lenora Piper, some of the people could go right over there and start communicating back, and others had to learn how. And typically, it depends on spiritual development on this side, what's going to happen on that side. But everybody, when they get there, has to learn where are they. Some of the things that have been reported over the years, people arrive there and they're looking around. Their church says, well, you can go be with Jesus. They're looking around for Jesus and they don't find him. Okay, well, that's what the church said was going to happen, so that's what they're waiting for. And they have to kind of overcome what they're waiting for and what they're looking for and discover, you know, you're still alive and you're over there, and now maybe you want to try to communicate back. So some people take a long time to get through that and accept what is rather than what they expected, and then they'll move towards communicating back. People who have, like in the SDR, the British Society for Psychical Research, names skipping my mind right now. When certain fellow died there. He came back within the next day to see his wife. His wife was at a seance. I mean, that's what they were doing, and that's who they are.
Right.
And, and he's back the next day. So it depends on how ready you are for that. And if you've been spent all your time down at the Christian church being told that anything having to do with speaking with spirits is of the devil, you might not get there right away.
Mm. You know? One thing that struck me that you wrote in the book is that you described when you return to the prior life, when you have a near-death experience, it's actually a second life and not at all a part of the first life. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I'm not the same person at all as I was in the first life. My first life, as I look back, if I want to go there and see the memories, they're all in black and white, and I have to pull them up out of an older file. Mm-hmm. Everything in this second life is all in living color, and I can remember it. And I'm the same soul living a second life in the same body, but I'm not the same personality that was here in the first body, in the first life. Go ahead.
I'm sure
everybody expects me to be the same guy.
Yeah, I mean, nobody, everybody expects you to be the same guy, but of course you know that you're not. Going along with that, you mentioned that there are certain things that you now know for sure. I guess that guides you in this second life. You have some knowledge that many people don't. Do you live your life differently because of that?
Much more psychic and much more feeling and much more loving than I was the first time. And it's just, there I go again. I break up easily because I have a lot of feeling. And some people notice that. When I see break up, he wants to get tears in his eyes. And it's because of all of that. I have to, much more sensitive than I was before. And all near-death experiencers will tell you the same thing, that they're much more psychic, much more feeling. They're much more what you might call the noble qualities or honorable qualities improve greatly just because they realize that we're here for eternity. We're not here for a short term of 7 years or something. We're here for eternity, and it's just this physical life is maybe short, but there's a lot of after this, and while I can't tell you everything about what's after this, I do know that it's real because I've been there.
And and it's great that we have people that have been there that can tell us what it's like, because as you mentioned, it can provide a roadmap to where we're going. And incidentally, in Alan's book, in the death experience, in addition to talking to about the scientific basis for the afterlife, and he goes into near-death experiences and mediumship and after-death communications, reincarnation, consciousness. He also has a section that he calls the roadmap, where he talks about things like facing death and beginning the journey, and a roadmap in the afterlife, continuing the afterlife, and most importantly, what it all means. So I would encourage you pick up the book. It's called The Death Experience, and the subtitle is What It Is Like When You Die. You can learn more about Alan and his work by going to the website afterlife.pro. Alan, thanks so much for being with us. We enjoyed it, and we hope you'll come back and join us again.
Happy to do it for you, Bob, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Take care and have a good evening.
Okay, we now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Francis Mastracco, Tim Donahue, Deb Martin, Tina Jocelyn, Barbara Russell, Alex, Nancy Scheel, Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Barron, Eileen Lafada, Rita Springer, David Hayes, Barbara Petillo, Glenna Irwin, Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Julie B., Stanley Newland, Flora Prisco, Tracy Lee Nash, Marianne Pierschka, Tanya Cash. And now let us pray for the world with our global peace prayer. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And that was created by Claude Swanson, and you can read more about that prayer on the Claude B. Swanson website, synchronizeduniverse.com. And with that, we'd like to end the evening by saying,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.